On today's episode, Black Monday takes on an entirely new meaning. We dive into a capital gains case study and updates from the FI community. Welcome to Choose FI.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, Brad, a lot to get into this past week. And, you know, as we're recording this on Tuesday, both of us recognized that yesterday was a pretty volatile day by any standard.
Yeah, we are recording this on Tuesday, March 10th, 2020. And yesterday was the biggest single point drop in the Dow in history, I believe. It was over 2,000 points. And I guess my question to you is, did you take any action either way?
You know, it's interesting you say that, Brad. Like, a lot of things happen at once. And then, for instance, just several weeks ago, I was telling you how I was going to be in the process. And in fact, I even got you to commit to this process as well of refinancing our home. And so there's some money that I needed to set aside for that refinancing process. And that money pretty closely maps out to the amount of discretionary money that I would have had to invest, you know, on top of what my normal contributions are. And so it was kind of painful watching you. Well, first of all, I should say that as yesterday happened, it was just incredible to see it. The volatility, the swings in the market. It did not affect my psyche in a negative way. In fact, it was kind of like perverse in that I was just a little disappointed that I couldn't purchase. I couldn't walk away. Even if it had been a small amount, I couldn't look back a week from now and said, man, I was able to get a couple thousand dollars in there when it dropped by 20%, by 30%. But there was no point in time yesterday was there, wow, it's gone down 20%. I need to get all my chips off the table. That never crossed my mind. And I wonder if it did for people in our audience.
I mean, I would have to imagine that it did cross people's minds, just because if this is the first time you're going through this, no matter how many times you hear us talk about it, that this is normal, this is a cycle. While albeit a 2,000 point one day drop is not exactly normal, still over 10, 20, 30 years, you're going to see things like this. It's not that out of the ordinary. And you do need to steel yourself against it. I think that really mentally is the hardest part. And I think this brings me back to a quote that I love from Warren Buffett that I'm going to read here in a second. But for people in the accumulation phase, like you, this is the perfect time as the market is plummeting to keep on investing your money, because you're getting, essentially, as we see this market go down day by day, you're getting a discount every single day. So it's just kind of a cool rethink on it. And obviously, psychologically, it's difficult for people who have a significant net worth and they see it go down 5, 7, 8% in one day. That is not an easy thing to stomach. But I think if you have an investing plan and you have a long-term mindset, it does make it easier. And again, this Warren Buffett quote, every decade or so, dark clouds will fill the economic skies and they will briefly rain gold. When downpours of that sort occur, it's imperative that we rush outdoors carrying washtubs, not teaspoons, and that we will do. And that gives me chills every single time I hear it.
You know, as you can imagine, in our Facebook group, a lot of the conversation seems to be revolving around both the financial and the very real economic pain that seems to be coming from increasingly what looks like is going to be called a pandemic. And it's very easy to say, oh, all the other times, right? All the other times. But what about now? And one thing I was struck by in our group, I noticed that Frank made this wise observation. And basically, like if you were to go back all the way back and look at like the Great Depression, and you were to see how deep the market stumbled after that and how long it took to actually come back, you could be scared off, you know? But if individuals didn't get scared, and they dollar cost averaged their whole way through, they were making, despite how bad it looked from the outset, they were making 11% annualized, 11% returns annualized. So that's a massive, you know, word of encouragement for people in the accumulation phase. This is your once in a lifetime
you know, opportunity. Warren Buffett said, it took me 89 years to experience something like this. And so for you, you know, you've got your expenses under control. You've got your savings rate up. All the work that you put in ahead of time has prepared you for this. This is your opportunity if you can go into it with the right mentality. And for those individuals that are closer to drawdown, closer to retirement, maybe at retirement, what an opportunity for us to reassess and take a hard look at our actual risk tolerance. This is different than selling, but just starting to map out how are you going to be able to buffer the storms when they hit, and taking a look at your spending and figuring out, hey, what am I taking for granted that I really shouldn't take for granted anymore? You know, what can I cut if I need to before it gets painful? Just being really, you know, able and ready to roll with it, because you don't know where this is headed, but I guarantee you, as a community of people that are saving money and focused on that, you have an edge just out the gate. So just take that as your comfort. You know, there could be a lot of pain attached to the next, you know, month, 2 months, several months, but you've been taking action on these ideas. You've been preparing, you've been saving, you've been keeping your expenses in check and focusing on what it is that you value. And you are more prepared than most for what's coming. And it's important to recognize the power of being around a community of people like this.
And talking about a plan, so Jason and I several years ago wrote down our investor policy statement. I forget which blogger in our space originated this, but I know several have talked about it, where when things were going well, we wrote down, this is our strategy. This is what we do to invest. This is when we're comfortable taking things out. You know, we have a written plan. So the past few weeks, as Jason has been very excited and like, let's do this. What about this stock? Let's go with individual stocks now instead of just index funds. I've just said, let's look at our investor policy statement. And so we actually had a few of the crowdfunded real estate investments he did pay off. And I said, okay, that's your play money. If you want to go play while stocks are down, that's what you get to play with. Everything else follows this exact plan that we've already laid out. And that also lays out how much stays in our cash reserves for our emergency fund. So right now it might be very tempting to say, all of our cash, put it in the market. You know, this is what we've been saving for. But no, we actually want to make sure, in case either of us loses an income source, we have that emergency fund still available in cash. So it's good to remember not to go too crazy either way. Don't sell everything right now just because it's down. That's the worst time to sell, but don't buy everything either if it doesn't match your plan and it's going to compromise your financial security in another way.
So Jason is certainly not fearful here, right? He's actually seeing, kind of like this Buffett quote, he's seeing these dark economic skies and potentially raining gold for individual stocks. But because your investor policy statement said, we don't do that, that's not part of the plan, that put the brakes on that. And is that right? So you guys actually had that conversation?
Yes. Yeah. He was talking about, well, this industry should be impacted and you might get benefits if you're an investor here. And, oh, well, if this one goes down, it's got to come back up eventually. And I was like, okay, well, that's speculative. So you get a small little bucket of money for your speculative investments, and the rest needs to go into what we know and what we trust, which is our broad-based index funds. It's not often that I'm the one who's guiding the strategy. Usually he's like, put this here, put this there. Okay, done. But had to talk him a bit off the ledge of putting everything in on a certain individual stocks.
Jason, consider yourself called out. you know, one thing that I was thinking about is the 100% equities fueled path to financial independence. I personally am 100% equities. So whatever happens with the total market pretty much mirrors what happens in my own portfolio. But I'm doing that from the perspective of someone that has a pretty significant amount of time before I'm going to be really in drawdown. One thing I was thinking about, even as we mentioned it, yes, we talked about it last Friday with Purple's episode. Whenever you're talking about volatility in the market, really you're talking about if your portfolio reflects like an S&P 500 index fund or a Vanguard total stock market index fund where you own a cap-weighted piece of the entire economy. The Trinity study and most retirement planners in general would advocate for someone to be in a much more conservative allocation as you're actually going to need to rely on these funds. So as I started to approaching the point where I would be needing these funds, I would either stop my equity contributions, the contributions I'm making to like a total stock market index fund, or I would just slow them down and contribute a larger percentage toward bonds to flesh that out as I'm actually needing this money. And I really wanted to point that out for people. I think there's a lot of power to just being, when you don't need the money right now, when you're just early on in your investing journey, using an equity-fueled path to financial independence. I don't see a downside, but I think if our audience is coming away with the fact that I'm just always going to be 100% stocks and they don't question that, like this week in particular should be a highlighter for you to think about that investor policy statement and to think about what your drawdown strategy might actually look like. And I think for us, if we think about the remainder of the year, it might be a place for us to actually spend a little bit more time.
Yeah, and that investor policy statement is something that you think about in rational times, not in emotionally fueled times like this. It's easy to be emotional. Even I got emotional looking at the stock market swings and wondering, like, what should I do? And I think the answer that I came to was, I stick with my plan, right? Because I had this plan in calm times. And I thought about this rationally with my wife. And this is what we want to do moving forward. And Jonathan, just for the sake of clarity here, just because we talk about this stuff all the time, equities, I think a lot of people hear that term and they're not 100% sure what it means, but it's stocks, it's mutual funds, it's ETFs. Those are generally under the bucket of equities. So just think of it in terms of low cost, broad-based mutual funds, index funds, stocks, things like that. Those people call equities. And as the Trinity study looks at it, it's slightly more conservative. They have a 60% equity and 40% bond split, as opposed to you and I have 100% equities in our own personal holdings. That's not what we're advocating, certainly, for you, the audience. You need to make it up based on your own investor policy statement and your own situation. That is what you and I both do.
Yes, yes, it is. And even now, there's no problem with this currently. Here's what I wanted to do. And today we actually have an incredible capital gains case study all teed up, ready to go. We're going to be rolling this out. And so I'm going to, for our audience and to get buy-in from you, here's what I think over the next year, here's how we can best serve our audience. We've talked a lot about wealth accumulation. We've talked a lot about tax strategy. We're going to be doing case studies with our community, actually looking at how these principles that we've discussed, how they would apply to an individual's life, recognizing the nuance of their specific situation as opposed to theory. If we recognize that our audience is probably 80% plus people on the path to financial independence, wealth accumulation, it's not a stretch at this point to realize that probably 10% or more, probably more, are actually within 5 years of drawdown, within 5 years of needing this money. And the information that would best serve them would be information that would help them create their own framework around a drawdown strategy. And so here's what I think we should highlight. I want to spend more time this fall looking at kind of three or four different drawdown strategy models, what they have in common, what the unique strengths and weaknesses might be. I don't know if there's an absolute one, but here's three that I'll just throw out there. You have a yield shield strategy advocated for by Bryson Christie. This is what they personally used. Retirement Manifesto, he just recently released a new book. We'll be talking with him, but he talks about the bucket strategy, having these buckets of cash that you can then replenish over time. And Big Earn kind of treats it, Big Earn has his own take on this, and it's kind of just pay yourself the same way you did when you had a paycheck. Treat your retirement funds like they are a source of income. How would you do that? We can weave into that conversations about where do annuities fit into this conversation. We've talked about that in the past, but let's weave that into drawdown, fixed income strategies, Social Security as it's relevant, those sorts of things. And then assessing someone's risk tolerance to determine like J.L. Collins, for instance, I don't think he is a 60-40. I think he's somewhere in that 75-25 range of 75% equities, 25% bonds. And so there's kind of like, how do you determine what your risk tolerance is? Because there is, you know, it's subjective, but there is a way of figuring that out. For instance, if you're 100% equities, but because you're so far past the number you need, your life can tolerate 20, 30% swings in the market. Maybe you could be 100% equities all the time, but other people, maybe you can't tolerate those sorts of swings. Maybe you need to have a more conservative portfolio. So these are the types of things that come together to help someone figure out what their drawdown strategy would be. I think we really should dedicate some time and some resources to, we'd have to learn this with our audience. This is not something that we walked into the FI community with this knowledge. Why would you? Why, you know, accountant, pharmacist. But I think all of us would win if we could go a little bit farther with this information.
Yeah. No, I think that sounds fantastic.
So with that, let's go ahead and tee up the capital gains case study. All right, everyone, excited about this conversation. We're going to be talking about capital gains tax brackets today. And, you know, I was helping this individual with their kind of get their FI plan together the other day. And in fact, we're going to be doing some FI case studies in the near future. And a question that comes up is, well, actually, I don't even know how to invest outside of my 401k, which we've talked through that. We'll talk through it again in the future. But if you realize that like that conversation hasn't been had yet, then it becomes very obvious that this individual would not understand how capital gains works, right? How capital gains tax brackets work. And so as kind of one of these building blocks of FI, it's really important to understand where these financial tools that are out there fit. Because once you understand the tools and the rules, you can know how to mold them, mold your financial picture around how you want to optimize in the near, mid, and long-term future. So Brad, what do you think? Capital gains tax brackets.
Yeah, no, it sounds great. I think it's a really fundamental piece of understanding taxation. And I think it's an important part of being on the journey to FI. Let's do it.
So I think before we talk about capital gains, it's going to be important to just be able to partition these vehicles out. So before we talk about, you know, your taxable investments, we'll get there. Let's talk about tax advantaged and what that means practically for someone on the path to financial independence. The two ones that you see most commonly are tax deferred. So I'm not going to pay taxes on this now. And this would be in the context of maybe your employer's retirement plan. You might see a 401k, 403b, 457, an HSA to some degree would fit in this category as well. And then there is the Roth, which also has a couple variants, whether or not you're talking about inside a 401k, you're talking about a Roth IRA. With the Roth, it's kind of unique in that you're accepting the tax at your income bracket that you're at that moment in time. And then the growth is tax-free, and when you pull it out, it's tax-free. It's kind of an interesting vehicle. So those two we've talked about before, and we'll have additional conversations around, but this third category is really what we're going to be spending time on today, and that is what we call your taxable accounts, just your savings that happen to be invested in the market.
Yeah, and that word taxable, I think that throws people off. We haven't come up with a better way to describe this, but it's generally known as these are your taxable accounts. But they're just your savings accounts. These are not retirement accounts. They're not tax advantaged, tax deferred. They're none of this. It's just your regular savings. This is money that you could put in your regular bank account, a savings account, checking account, under your mattress in a freezer, or most likely, hopefully, if you're listening to the show, in some type of ETF or mutual fund that's an index fund, broad-based, low expense ratio fund. Right? That's what we're talking about, generally speaking, when we're referring to these taxable investments. These are not a part of any retirement vehicle. That's really the essence of it.
I think it's really important when you're having these financial conversations to kind of not try to cover everything at once, but to focus on one concept, one idea. Because at some point, you do view these as tools in your toolbox to use when you need them as it advantages you with regards to the tax code. So what I thought we could do is first, we'll definition of terms. You know, what are capital gains? So, and then how, even though we call it a taxable account, how there's actually a lot of opportunity here for someone that understands the rules. So I guess, first of all, we just described taxable accounts. Capital gains are related to taxable accounts. This is directly related to having money inside of a taxable account. Brad, what is capital gains?
Yeah, so a capital gain is essentially the rise in value over your purchase price. And let's just talk about stocks or mutual funds. Let's say you purchased a mutual fund for $100 per share. That's your basis, all right? That's the amount that you bought it for. Now, we're going to exclude some extraneous detail like dividends and things like that, because that gets a little too complicated. But just for the sake of illustration here, the basis in this share is $100. And let's say at some point in the future, it's worth $180. So the current fair market value is $180. Your basis, or what you purchase it for, is $100. So that difference, that $80 difference of the increase in value, is your capital gain. Now, in this case, it is until the point you sell that mutual fund, this is an unrealized capital gain because you have not sold it. You have not realized the capital gain. Now, obviously, when we're talking about tax brackets, that's based on a taxable event. All right. So in this case, you would have to realize or sell the mutual fund shares in order for there to be a taxable capital gain. That's really the fundamental kind of understanding here.
And that's interesting. So when we talk about the word realize, really, we could just say sell, right? When do you sell these? And the question is, did you buy it? It blew up in price and you sold it right away? Or have you been sitting on these funds for a long period of time? And actually, uniquely to our tax code, these are aptly named as short-term capital gains rates and long-term capital gains rates. And the difference being, did you hold this fund, this tiny little piece of this company or this mutual fund that you have, did you hold it for longer than a year or less than a year? If it's less than a year from the time you bought it, it's now considered short-term capital gains. If you've been holding this for years, then now you're talking about long-term capital gains. And there's a difference from the tax treatment.
Yeah. So this is a really important concept here. So short-term capital gains. Now, I'm not sure the intention of this ruling or legislation, but I would like to believe that this is to promote long-term thinking, which really ties into what we talk about here in the FI community. You don't want to be buying and selling things, right? It's bad in terms of behavioral economics. You get your brain and your emotions involved in things. So I think long-term, I think 30 to 50 years. And now the cool thing here is that the tax code follows that thinking. So if you're someone who is selling short-term, as Jonathan just said, under a year. So you've held that security for under a year. The capital gain on that is taxed at your ordinary income rates. Okay. So now there's no tax advantage to selling this capital gain if it is short term. It's just at your top marginal tax bracket, which can be certainly in the 20% range or even higher if you make a significant amount of income. So those rates can be significant, but the crucial piece here is understanding if it's short-term, it's taxed at your ordinary income rate. Now, if it is long-term, that's where we start getting into some real interesting things here and where Jonathan's going with this case study entirely.
You can see the smile spreading across my face.
Yep. Hear it in his voice. And if you have sold this security, what you've held for at least a year or more, could be many years or decades, but certainly once it gets to that threshold of a year, it is considered a long-term capital gain. And that's where we start talking. There are very specific capital gains tax brackets.
So to be honest with you, the entire reason that we are doing this is to talk really about those long-term capital gains rates and the favorable tax treatment. We're going to dive into some meat today. So first of all, if you want to follow along with us, just Google Choosify and capital gains tax brackets, or you can just go to the show notes for this episode and we'll actually have a link to the article as well. If you're already at the article, congratulations. Let's learn how this works. So when we're talking about long-term capital gains tax rates, it is significantly advantaged if you're living a middle-class lifestyle. And what I mean by that is there's two main brackets that the vast majority of people will fall in for long-term capital gains tax rates. It's either 0%. Yeah, you heard me. 0% tax rate. If you're making, and I'm going to use these numbers at for a married couple filing joint, but we'll actually do a case study for single individuals as well. But married filing joint, up to $80,000 a year. Like if you make less than that, you can realize or sell capital gains that meet up to that point, pay a 0% federal tax on this. And that does not include the standard deduction. So with the standard deduction in mind, you will actually see that swell to just under $105,000. We're gonna do a case study on this, but I just mean practically, if you have all of your ducks in a row and you're blending your ordinary income, pulling from your 401k and your understanding of how to leverage and sell and keep yourself under these tax thresholds, you could make more, you know, $105,000 or more and pay $0 in federal tax. Does that sound appealing? All right, we're going to talk about how.
And the second bracket, and again, we're talking about this being advantaged, right? Because as compared to your regular ordinary income rates, which can be easily in the 20%+, we're actually talking the second bracket here for long-term capital gains are 15%. Now, Jonathan, you mentioned $80,000 as the taxable income threshold for the 0%. Now, this naturally starts at the next dollar, so $80,001, all the way up to $496,600. So I think it's safe to say 99%+ of people listening to this are going to fall in one of those two brackets. So it's either zero in the best case scenario or 15%, which is still phenomenal and is going to be almost invariably lower than your marginal tax bracket for ordinary income rates. So you see why there is an advantage to selling this once it gets to that year or more.
Oh man, for those few of you that don't quite fall under that $400,000+ a year bracket, shame. Sorry, shame. All right. So I think actually you kind of highlighted that, but I think it's important for people to actually think about that. So in normal ordinary income brackets, we talk about 0% marginal tax bracket, 10%, 12%, 22%, 24% and beyond. We want to do whatever we can while we're bringing in W-2 income to avoid those higher marginal tax brackets and delay it for a day in which we're not subject to those brackets and we can actually deal with capital gains. That's why we're always talking about maxing out our 401k. When we draw that 401k money, now that's going to be treated like ordinary income, but we get to pick how much we want to draw from our 401k and how much we want to draw from our taxable to maximize the advantage that we get with regards to these brackets. The case study that I've set in mind is really catered towards this optimization strategy. But I think it's important to say this conversation that we're having is then predicated on prior conversations that we've had and we'll probably have again, talking about just basically understanding the marginal tax brackets as they exist and how you can manipulate. And I say that in a very positive way, it just means knowing the rules, how you can manipulate which one you fall into. So if you're in a 22%, could you put money into your 401k to drop you out of that and keep most of the money that you're bringing home in those lower marginal tax brackets? It's that sort of mentality with this long-term thinking in mind that allows you to be at the point at some point in time where you're talking about up to $100,000 in income, no federal income tax. All right, so I've done two case studies here. Now, if I think about in the past, a lot of what we have done has been catered towards this hypothetical, quote-unquote, early retiree that's living this extremely frugal lifestyle and is staying in very low, you know, what you would think of as marginal tax. Like, that's just, if I were to look back at some of the case studies it's done, it's been really catered towards how can I access my money ahead of time? And it's valuable. All those tools still work here, but it's not going to be our focus today. We're not going to worry about trying to get our money out early. We're not trying to worry about Roth conversion ladders. This is just retirement planning, but understanding the rules ahead of time so you can optimize around it. So for the case study that I picked out, I get to pick the numbers that I want to pick. I can make anything. You can have more than this, but there's, you know, these numbers, if you had at least this, you're kind of maximizing your capabilities here. So here's what I came up with. So I didn't have to get around 59 and a half, that kind of, you know, arbitrary age range that our government has come up with. We're just picking a 60-year-old couple. So they married, filing joint. They've maxed out a 401k for 20 years. In that 401k, this couple has $850,000, $850,000, 60 years old, $850,000 in the 401k. They also have been dutifully investing in taxable accounts, which we will define as low-cost broad-based index fund of your provider of choice, but not inside of a 401k vehicle or a Roth IRA, et cetera. And they actually have $2.5 million in these taxable accounts. Now, this is a conservative couple. They've been listening to Big Earn. They want to use a 4% rule of thumb, which for them looks like a 3.5% safe withdrawal rate. They just kind of multiplied that out, right? And they came up with a number. Their starting number is $117,000. From here, we're going to map out how they can basically have that level of income and pay no federal tax by understanding how to blend their ordinary income from what they have in their 401k and their capital gains from their taxable accounts, how to blend those together to pay nothing in federal tax.
All right, Jonathan. So just to be clear here, we're talking about safe withdrawal rates. So naturally, you're going to pull that out, I guess, if that's the money you need to live on. I guess in this hypothetical, this is a pretty high spending couple. We're talking about $117,000 a year that they are looking to get, right? Is that fair to say at the outset of this?
Yeah, it's a great point, Brad. Really, I was trying to put some pressure on the limits of what you could pull off once you understand the rules of capital gains tax brackets. As for what this individual's life actually cost, you know, hopefully maybe it's a fraction of that and it's just a lot of discretionary expenses. But I think it's kind of cool for all of us to kind of understand the upper limits on this are very, very generous.
Gotcha. All right. So to everybody out there, if this number sounds crazy to you, both that expense amount or even the $3.35 million that these people have, the concepts are the same. That's the important part here. We're trying to get you to understand how these capital gains tax brackets work. And also, there's a real interplay here between the basis and the amount you're allowed to take out and the taxable effects of this. So this is going to be really, really cool, even if you can't relate to this 60-year-old couple with $3+ million.
So let's go back. You remember just a second. Let's talk about that free money just for a second here. So we've actually talked about child tax credits in the past. Like, let's assume, you know, 60-year-old couple, their kids are out of the nest, right? There's no child tax credits coming here. So we're just interested in the standard deduction as it is right now, which for a couple that's married filing joint, we got $24,800. This is how much money, how much income you can bring home without paying anything in federal tax. It's pretty generous.
All right. So, Jonathan, we're actually saying here, since we talked a couple of minutes ago about the long-term capital gains tax rate of 0% if your income is under $80,000, that's taxable income. So that's $80,000 plus this standard deduction. It's actually $104,800 is the capital gains, the long-term capital gains that you could have showing on your tax return, and you would still pay $0 in federal tax. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's 100% accurate. But because the standard deduction is smaller than of those two options, we're going to start with how to maximize that first. And so I would say we're going to start drawing money in terms of filling this bucket. If you think about this bucket that we're filling up, and just in our mental planning, how you actually do this may look different, but for your mental planning, we're going to draw that first $24,800. We're going to draw that out of our 401k because this couple has some money. If you remember, they have about $850K in their 401ks and they have like $2.5 million in taxable accounts. It's a pretty big nest egg, but they're going to take that first $24,800. They're taking that from their 401k. And even though they didn't pay taxes on it, when it went in, even though it grew tax-free, now they're taking it out and they're saying, federal government, you can tax me. But the federal government's like, well, you're in a, you know, 0% marginal tax bracket. So now you're fine. You're good. So now they haven't paid anything on the growth on that first $24,800.
Okay, gotcha. So every dollar that you pull out of a traditional 401k or traditional IRA, that is a taxable event. So you're saying this couple is pulling out $24,800. Now that will go onto their tax return as taxable income, but because of the standard deduction, it would wipe that down to zero. So their taxable income is zero. And because of these long-term cap gains tax brackets, they have $80,000 in space. Yes. In this hypothetical to have long-term capital gains and pay $0 in federal tax. So in your example here, they are in essence pulling out of both their 401k and basically doing what's known as capital gains tax harvesting.
Yes. So they still have $80,000 in capital gain space. And that's interesting. I'm glad you pointed that out because there's actually a difference between your basis, as you were pointing out at the beginning of this, and your capital gains. So if you look at a stock that's been growing, total returns have looked like 8% over 20 or 30 years, you would expect that that stock has doubled in price a couple times. Like it might be 1 to 4 or more, one being your basis and four being kind of the capital gains that have happened over time. That's pretty incredible. And it actually means it's kind of important to think through that because you're not being taxed on all of it. You already taxed the first time on what you put in.
Okay. That is a perfect explanation. So let's just set the stage here. This couple needs $117,250 to cover their yearly expenses. We've said that they are pulling out $24,800 from their 401k. The remaining amount that they need to cover their lifestyle is $92,450. Now, they need to pull that amount out of their taxable investments.
Yes.
So mechanically, what happens there is they sell $92,450 worth of stocks or ETFs or mutual funds, and the $92,450 shows up in their bank account, and that's the amount that they live on for the year, okay, plus the $24,800 that they pulled from their 401k. But now the crucial point here is that, like Jonathan said, not all of that $92,450 is taxable income. It's not all capital gains. Only a tiny portion of it is, because it depends on your basis. And of course, there's no way that we can give every single example because it depends on the stock or mutual fund or ETF that you own and is underlying in here. But Jonathan, you just said 4 to 1. So if you're assuming 20% is the basis of this, so $92,450 is the cash that you walked away with. But when you actually bought those securities a long, long time ago, the purchase price was actually only $18,490.
Right.
All right. So that's what's so interesting about the growth of this. And the difference there, you just subtract those out. So 18,490 minus 92,450, which is what we collected in cash from the sale, the $73,960 is what the actual capital gain is here. That difference from the basis, what you originally bought it for and what you sold it for, that appreciation, that is the capital gain. And because this is all long-term, we've been holding it for more than a year, this is long-term capital gain. And now, Jonathan, that fits under the $80,000 that we talked about at the 0% long-term cap gains rate.
What you just described should, like, if an audience did not know the rules, their mind should be blown by that. You understand? Like, if you hadn't, if that has not been explained to you, this is basically telling you this is a replicable process to bring home $100,000+ of income and pay nothing in federal income tax. You don't need to be extremely frugal to pull this off. The vast majority of the people that I know, if they could put steps in place to be in this position at the age of 60, would save themselves tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in tax by understanding the implications of this small little segment that we just recorded now. And to your point, we didn't even max out the tax brackets. Like you could have gone farther. We just kind of arbitrarily said, well, 3.5% safe withdrawal rate, let's work our way down and kind of go down that way. You could have worked it the other way and say, well, how can I squeeze every single penny out of the long-term capital gains tax brackets? And in fact, even if I don't need it, is there an incentive for me to do so? And I think the case that we could make, and it's a slightly different conversation, maybe we save it for another day, is that, yeah, you probably should and could, and there's a name for that.
Yeah, so that is capital gains tax harvesting. So now in this case, they still have another $6,000 plus of capital gains that would be taxed at 0%. Right. So in this case, it's $6,040. We're being very precise here. So
I love the precision with all the assumptions that we baked in. It's the best part.
Oh, man. I can't help it. What that means is they can realize another $6,040 of long-term capital gains and still pay $0 in federal tax on this. To me, the obvious answer is you should certainly do that. Right. Even though they don't need this for their yearly expenses that year. They're not going to blow this money. They're not going to spend it. They're just making a very smart tax play. So the capital gains tax harvesting, what they're going to do here very simply is they are going to sell this. They're going to realize the capital gains of a little over $6,000. As Jonathan likes to say, tell the government, tax me. And the government says, no, thank you, in essence, because the rules are you have up to $80,000 and you hit that amount on the dollar. So that's all taxed at 0%. Now, again, they do not need to spend this money. So what they can do is turn around and just buy securities again. They can buy the exact same ones.
Yeah.
Most people are familiar or may have heard the phrase wash sale. This is getting way in the weeds. That's only when you sell at a capital loss, because most normal people are trying to capital gains loss harvest, in essence, which for most normal people lowers their tax rate and their tax liability that year. But because this is an extraordinary concept for people in the FI community, we are actually capital gains tax harvesting, which is really, really unusual. So they are capital gains tax harvesting in this scenario and basically saying, tax me. Government says, no, thank you. So they just rebuy the securities. Their basis is now stepped up. So the basis is that current day's fair market value that they bought the stock, and that tax, that potential capital gain is gone forever because the basis is what they bought it at this new price. So this is forever locking in $0 in capital gains on that previously unrealized capital gain. It's just amazing.
I was going to save that for totally another conversation, Brad.
I can't help it, man.
We're going to go back to this one again. It's that important. But no, real quick though on that, what we're talking about, these are the rules. And what you're describing is only available to people with specific income situations. Because if you're doing this on the way to retirement, right? You try to step up your basis through capital gains, tax harvesting. If you make $200,000 a year, you know, you're probably not going to be able to do this. But if you make, I don't know, we could work your way up 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, 120, 130 even, and you're maximizing all your tax advantage vehicles, so your 401k for yourself, for your spouse, to bring yourself down below that, in my mind, that I kind of arbitrarily, it's not arbitrary, but it's like $105,000 is kind of that anything that you, if you can get your AGI
significantly down below 105, either because you don't make as much or because you're taking advantage of tax deferred vehicles to force your way down there. The difference between 105, 105,000 and your AGI is the room at which you can do this sort of playing around each and every year to further optimize.
Yeah, and that's really important. This is not only for this random 60-year-old couple. Everybody out there listening to this, if you fall under that $80,000 of taxable income that we're talking about here, you can take advantage of this capital gains tax harvesting this year. So this is something to look into. I know it's unorthodox. And if you ask your accountant friends or financial advisors, they're probably going to look at you like you have five heads, but this is legitimate and you can easily, easily do this. You need to figure out how much space you have, but you are potentially locking in $0 in capital gains tax on what otherwise would have been taxed. So this to me is a no-brainer.
I don't want to leave individuals that are not married filing jointly in the dust here. I actually took the time to do a case study to look at what it would look like to kind of maximize for an individual that is filing single. So when we're talking about a single filer case study, we're still looking at this individual that is 60 years old. We're not worried about any, I'm just trying to get stuff out of the way. We're not talking about dividends. We're just things we're not worrying about. We're just focusing on how capital gains and this tax rate, tax bracket would work for a single filer. So what we talked about, 80,000 for married filing joint for a single filer, it's just cut straight in half. It's $40,000 is that window. And then also, if you look at the standard deduction, which is an important thing to consider as well, it's $24,800 for married filing jointly. It's only $12,400 standard deduction for a single filer. So add both of those two together, and that gives us our kind of window, our threshold that we have to work in, and it's $52,400. That's kind of our window to optimize inside of. So this 60-year-old individual, again, all these numbers can change. You can make them what you want, but if you have this amount, you'll really, or more, it still works if you have more, but this amount will really allow you to maximize this, in my opinion. That has $400,000 in their 401k. They have $1.1 million in their taxable account. So it's a very convenient $1.5 million. They're also thinking about this 3.5% safe withdrawal rate. And what we're going to do again, same process we followed before. We're going to think about the buckets. We're going to look at filling up that standard deduction of $12,400 first. We're going to take that from that 401k, because that ordinary income will now be treated at that favorable 0% marginal tax bracket. And then we're going to look at the remainder. We're going to grab the remainder from what we have in those taxable accounts. And, you know, keep in mind, taxable accounts, you could have accessed that money at any point in time. It's not locked up until you're 60. It's your money. Do with it what you want. But this person didn't need it till they retired, and they retired at 60. And so that's why they're bringing it out now. So with that in mind, we're going to kind of use that arbitrary, you know, 1-to-4 ratio. You said 20% of that was basis. We'll kind of use that again. And so if they actually have $40,000 that they could take up to in capital gains, or from their taxable account in this case, we'll say that 20% of that is the basis.
All right, Jonathan. So this person has $1.5 million in their total net worth. They are taking a 3.5% safe withdrawal rate. We are implying there that they need $52,500 to cover their yearly expenses. Like we said, they're pulling out $12,400 from their 401k. That's going to be taxed at 0%. And they now need to make up $40,100 to cover the rest of their yearly expenses. Now, they are going to do that by selling some securities that are in their taxable accounts. They have to sell $40,100 worth of securities. Now, naturally, because there is some basis, if the basis was zero, if they happened to buy these for zero, which is impossible, then all of that would be long-term capital gains. But that is not the reality. We're saying the reality is 20% of that was purchase price. So the remaining 80%, or $32,080, makes up their long-term capital gains. So that, again, because Jonathan, as you said, the single filer gets up to $40,000 at that 0% long-term cap gains rates. They are well under that. So they're at $32,080, and they still have some space here, which is nice. This person could actually sell almost up to $8,000 additionally of capital gains, of long-term capital gains. So naturally, that would be higher than that in the amount of securities that they could sell and still be at a 0% tax rate. So this works. These are just two random case studies that we made up, but it doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter what your safe withdrawal rate is, what your net worth, what your expenses are. It's just math.
Yeah. And I love how you talked about, it depends on whether you're optimizing around that 3.5% safe withdrawal rate, or you're optimizing around, you know, maximizing out those capital gains tax brackets. I mean, I could very easily see a scenario where this individual, especially if it's kind of, if it's a bit their basis to cap gains, if that ratio is a little bit closer, where they could really be bringing home, you know, closer to $60,000, $65,000, $70,000 and effectively paying no federal tax. And so, if you lock this down, we're going to be doing case studies. We're going to be doing your case studies. You're going to be giving them to us. We're going to be working through them. But this is the rationale, the mentality that we use. This is why we do whatever we can to defer taxes on our ordinary income for as long as possible, because there's so much flexibility with this 15% tax rate on capital gains from basically $100,000 to well over $400,000. And that's not really affected a whole lot by married versus filing single. There is a huge, we can always lock in 15% later. Let's do what we can to defer those higher marginal tax brackets now, because you can control it. You can control it. There's a lot of wiggle room here. And, you know, down the road, you're going to have paid off your home. You're going to have paid off all your cars. Like you're actually, like we said, this is their expenses. This is what they need to live. No, it's probably not. It's probably not. A lot of this is cushion. This is what they can spend up to and stick within a very conservative and strategic retirement plan. Know the rules, win the game.
All right, so that was our capital gains case study. Brad, it is so much fun diving into the numbers.
Yeah, Jonathan, that was a fun one. And we're certainly going to roll out a lot more of these case studies in the coming weeks. I know you have a whole bunch of them teed up here in your workbook, so I'm excited.
It's getting so full. Look at all these notes.
MK, catch us up. We're actually highlighting, like we're starting to move towards bringing actual case studies on the show. Where are we at on that process?
Yeah, so we had a lot of great applications come in for our 6 FI households documentary. And what's great is that even though we may only be highlighting 6, you know, households as part of this, just knowing our resources, there are so many great stories that came in. We'll probably end up being able to invite some people on to do a case study. So we're actively going through all the hours of videos and applications that were sent in. So there's some really great stories in there that I can't wait for us to highlight. So we're hoping to have some communications going out in the next week or two to those who applied to let them know who's on to the next stage and who's going to be a great case study for us to highlight.
All right, so let's go ahead and open up the mailbag. What's going on in the FI community, MK?
Well, we have a lot of great local events coming up in the next couple of weeks. So this weekend, Choose FI Tampa Bay, Jason and I and a bunch of those from our local group here are going to be going berry picking at a local farm. And the great thing is after we get our berries, they have their own wines that they make too. So we're going to do a wine tasting, have some food truck food. It'll be a great time. And on the other coast this weekend, also Saturday the 14th, San Diego has a special presentation planned on investing from Jeremy Schneider from Personal Finance Club and financial coaching from Kelsa Dickey. So that should be really fun.
So is Kelsa in San Diego?
I guess she's traveling out just for this event. So that's really awesome that the San Diego group was able to get that on their calendar with her.
Oh, and MK, this is kind of a cool local group news. My brother, Scott, and his wife, Kristen, they are traveling the world this year. They're taking a year off from their international teaching. I was talking to him on WhatsApp a couple of days ago. He said they're in Valencia, Spain, and they're actually getting together with the Choose FI local group there. And my response was, wow, I had no idea we had a group in Valencia, Spain. And he said they actually just got started. And they just recently, I think last Saturday, held their first meetup. And it was such a success that they're having another meetup actually while him and Kristen are in town. So yeah, it's amazing to see these groups spread all across the world. It's really remarkable.
Speaking of all across the world, Choose FI Perth just posted a picture of their latest meetup. A lot of new faces there, including Bonnie Truax, who we actually interviewed in episode 115 of our podcast, making it all the way out to Perth, Australia for a Choose FI local meetup. So spreading around the world. It's pretty cool. All right, well, unfortunately, that is going to bring this episode to a close. Now, as you know, we like to finish every episode by doing a drawing for a copy of a book that we found useful. We're doing our book, Choose FI, Your Blueprint to Financial Independence, which can be found anywhere that books are sold. You can also find a copy at chooseFI.com/book. If you want to win a copy, you can enter this drawing. And what we're actually doing for the drawing right now, you know, this past week, we just talked about, we talked with Rob Phelan about his brand new book, The Simple Startup. It's a manual for teachers and students
that allows you to, over the period course of a semester, really help a student create their first entrepreneurial venture and do so kind of with the ethos of a pop-up business school model. If you want to win a copy of either the teacher manual or the student instructor manual, you can go to chooseify.com/iTunes, follow the instructions there, leave us a short written review, send us an email to feedback@chooseify.com, letting us know that you left a review and what screen name you left and under. If you want to purchase a copy of the Simple Startup series for your classroom, if you want to purchase an individual copy, I believe they're about $20 a piece. Or if you want to do a bulk order, we do offer a discount. And for more information on that bulk order discount, just shoot us an email to media@chooseify.com. media@chooseify.com. So back to the drawing. MK, how many winners do we have today?
Well, guys, today we have one winner, and that is Ben. Ben says, best financial podcast. I have been listening to this podcast for about 6 months now. I've listened to all of the new ones and have gone back and listened over to half of the existing ones. I've gotten valuable information out of each episode, even episodes that I did not think I was interested in, like real estate and public workers' retirements, had information that I could take away. I am trying to help spread the fire. Thanks, Brad and Jonathan, for an awesome show.
Well, thank you for listening. My friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.